Hello, my name's Matthew. I'm the lead pastor here at Cedar Ridge. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're really glad you're here. Last week, we wrapped up a series called Uncomfortable Conversations with Jesus. And next week, we're going to begin a brand new series called Reimagining Church as we look ahead to the fall and ways we can be church and do church together in these unusual circumstances of the pandemic. But today, what I wanted to do is just take a bit of time as a sort of one-off message to look back over these past 6 months. It's hard to believe, but it's 6 months since we've been able to gather together in person as a community. It was Sunday, March the 8th. And on that day, we talked for the first time, actually, publicly about the coronavirus, this virus that's caused COVID-19. And we talked about a few measures we were going to take, some safeguards. But then I don't think we really had any idea what was about to happen. By the end of that following week, we made the decision to close. I think back then we thought maybe it would be for a few weeks. And here we are 6 months later. So, you know, the whole world is obviously in the same situation at the moment. But we personally and as a community have really felt the impact of the pandemic, especially because we haven't been able to gather together. And, you know, as I look back, it's been a struggle. I think it's been a struggle for all of us. Some of us have struggled more than others due to certain circumstances. But there's been a lot of heartache, a lot of difficulty. But my prevailing emotion as I look back over these past 6 months is gratefulness for this community. Despite the struggles, despite the difficulties, despite the circumstances, this community here at Cedar Ridge has rallied, it's loved, it's cared, it's supported, it's served. And in many ways, despite the struggle, our community is alive and well, and we're pursuing our vision to follow Jesus. So I want to thank you. The fact that you're tuned in right now watching this video means that you're still engaged, you're still supportive, you're still connected. And it's just incredible. We've been doing these virtual services now for 6 months, and I want to thank you for your patience, because I can't remember why exactly, but I had to look back at one of the earlier messages that I did virtually, and it left a lot to be desired, let me say. I felt very wooden in front of the camera. I really didn't know what I was doing. Not sure I really know that much more now, but I think we've probably got a little bit better at it just by trial and error and repetition. But thank you for your patience, certainly with me, and for hanging on in with us, even though it's not the same, obviously, as being together. But we've been doing these every week. We've had our small groups have been meeting over Zoom. We've still farmed, and Ruth and the farm team have kept the farm going in some incredible ways over the spring and now into the summer and as we head into the fall. We've given food away from our farm and collected food from, bought food at grocery stores to give to families in need at Greencastle Elementary School. We've given money, sent money to Guatemala to our friends in Nepal who, because of the pandemic, main need right now is food, and they've been able to buy food and distribute food to people that really needed it. We've continued to pursue our vision for racial justice. Our racial justice team have been carrying out some really impactful Zoom meetings as we've grown in our understanding and of the situation and the problem of racial injustice and what we can do about it. We had the vigil for George Floyd back in June. That so many of us came to as a drive-in service. And so we've kept things going, and I just want to thank you. It's been difficult, but thank you so much for hanging on in there with us and for being so vital a part of this community and so committed to this community. It really is incredible. And one indication of that has been our giving. When we went into the pandemic, we were at 99% of our goal for giving from members like you and me of our church, and that was good. But here we are 6 months later, under very unusual circumstances, and we closed our year. Our year end was last Sunday. That was the last Sunday to give in the year. You know, we begin again on September 1st each year, and we were at 98%. So in this season, our giving has been incredibly strong, and it's just incredible. During August, we're making appeals to top up our funds because we've generally fallen behind on giving. But you have been so unbelievably faithful, and can't thank you enough. We've got to keep that up, of course, because we have lost income in other areas. So for instance, some of our rentals, you know, we rent to a school that have had kind of cut back drastically in terms of the amount of space they rent. The churches that rent from us have not been able to use the facilities as much, and so we've had to offer discounts to them accordingly. And so we've lost some rental income, but we've gained another church. We're working hard to keep those rentals up. It's a difficult time for that, but we have lost some income. So we need to keep that giving up. I want to encourage you to keep it going faithfully and sacrificially throughout the fall. But again, thank you so much for being part of this community and being here right now. I want to talk about three issues as I look back on this past 6 months, and it's kind of a personal heart to heart, I guess. This is just my perspective, but I want to touch on three issues, and that's the illusion of control, the reality of injustice, and the power of relationships. And they're all connected in many respects, and kind of begin with this issue of control. I think through this experience we've had in the pandemic and through the impact of the pandemic, we've realized that we probably have a lot less control over our own lives, over life in general, than we would like to imagine, or that we feel comfortable with. I think, we feel that personally. Many of us, our life circumstances have changed dramatically and kind of out of the blue, very dramatically and quickly. So we're all feeling that, we're not as in control of our lives and our circumstances as we have been in the past, perhaps. And I think we're feeling it as a species, as a human race across the planet. We're normally way more in control of things. And, I think, as a species, we pride ourselves on that. We're in command of our environment to a large degree, for good or for bad. I think in terms of ecology, it's probably not been always for good, our domination of the environment. But I think also we're asking questions about God in this respect. Is God in control? Did God create the coronavirus, this particular coronavirus? Should we pray to God to remove it, to save us all from it? Is God in control of all these circumstances that are going on? Lots of tough questions, I think, for people of faith. And we'll touch on that last one a little bit later. But this lack of control or loss of control, I think we can can look at it in a very negative sense. It feels so painful. It feels so difficult. But there's also, I think, something in it that can give us hope or give us an opportunity for growth and for change. And control is not inherently bad, or it's not inherently good either. I think it's good that we have control over our lives. It's good that we are empowered. And in fact, when we're in situations where we're not empowered, in our personal circumstances, or maybe based on our race or our gender or our class, we don't feel empowered in society, and quite the opposite. It's really healthy to strive for empowerment, to strive for more control over our destiny, more control over our circumstances. So, control's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think we also see it has a sinister side to it. For instance, we all know controlling people. I mean, we're not controlling people ourselves, of course, but, we all know controlling people. We see how for controlling people, everything has to comply with them. The world kind of revolves around them, that, it has to be, everything has to be their way. And, when we're controlling, I think we can tend to be very critical of other people who aren't complying with our wishes. We tend to be also quite resistant to criticism or resistant to pushback where people are trying to get us to change. I think we all recognize that in other people, recognize it in ourselves as being, that comes from a dark place. In that sense, control is not good. It's not a healthy thing. But the reality is whether it's good or bad, whether we see control as a good or a bad thing, we don't have full control. We and the pandemic has shown us that, right? We don't like it. When we're not in control of our circumstances, it feels painful. It feels very uncomfortable. But the reality is that's the truth. And we tend to react to that, though, and sort of strive for more control because it makes us feel safe. It makes us feel secure. And I think also inherently we have this belief, which I think personally is a fallacy. But I'm certainly, enticed by it, this belief a lot, which is that successful people who have their lives together, they're in control of their circumstances. And so, we spend much of our lives trying to prove ourselves and trying to gain control. But I think control is an illusion. We're not anywhere near as in control of our circumstances as we'd like to think. And circumstances like the pandemic show us that. They kind of open our eyes to that fact. It's uncomfortable. It's really difficult. But we realize that we're not in control. I had an experience at the end of last year. This is before the pandemic, at the beginning of December, where I had I ended up in hospital. I was for a few days. I had an episode of chest pain, breathlessness, lightheadedness. I nearly collapsed. I was out on a walk actually with my oldest daughter, and fortunately she was with me and rushed me to the hospital. And it was kind of alarming. And they thought I'd had a heart attack. They thought I'm usually pretty fit and pretty well, but they thought this is the sort of classic guy in his 50s who's suddenly out of nowhere had a heart attack. Anyway, I didn't have a heart attack. It turned out I had a cardiac arrhythmia. I go into episodes where my heart doesn't beat properly as it should. And what I realized had happened, and this was after discussion with the doctors, is that I'd been burning the candle at both ends. I was I had been trying to control my life. I'd been trying to solve problems by working harder, to preempt problems by working harder, to respond to criticism by working harder, to prevent criticism by working harder. Just do better, and control your environment, control the outcomes. And my body just couldn't take it anymore. And I'm not sure that it actually, that kind of stress caused the arrhythmia, but it certainly did not help it. And the medical consensus was that, I needed to make some lifestyle changes. So it kind of hit me that I was not in control. I was desperately trying to control my life and control how I'm perceived, control my, my own sense of self-worth based on what I accomplish. But I'm not in control. And I think many of us probably have had physical illnesses or situations that come out of the blue and that make us realize we're not in control, despite our futile attempts to have control. And that's uncomfortable and painful, but it really helped me take a deeper look. That loss of control helped me take a deeper look at my own life and see some things in greater clarity. And actually, in greater clarity, because not because I hadn't thought about them before, but because I got to a point where I could no longer control them. I think that here's the funny thing, I don't know whether it's funny, it's sort of tragically funny, is that in one sense, we can feel good about ourselves around control when we have control. So if we're a controlling person and we get our own way, we feel good. And so we don't think there's anything wrong, and we just happily carry on our merry way, not realizing that there might really be an underlying problem, i.e. why do we need control that badly? And we miss the opportunity to change, but we're conned into thinking everything's good and that we're doing well, we accomplish something. It's when we lose control and we seem to fail, or when we seem to be out of control, and we're going through that pain, that's this window then that opens where we can see, oh, this is what's going on in my life. Why am I like this? And we have this opportunity to change. And I think this is why Jesus said in Matthew 5, in the Beatitudes, we looked at the Sermon on the Mount. Actually, it was the series we were doing right at the beginning of the pandemic. And Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, I think words that we've all heard before, right at the beginning, the Beatitudes, it says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." In other words, I think what Jesus is saying here is being in control is not all it's cracked up to be. For him, he's not saying blessed are the successful, blessed are those who control their environment, blessed are those who don't get caught by surprise, who aren't down on their luck. Jesus is saying, blessed are you when you're poor in spirit. And actually, blessed are the meek, it's the meek that will inherit the earth. There's something about that we love, and there's something about it I think we find really hard to believe. We almost, it's like, yeah, well, that's kind of nice of Jesus to say stuff like that. But I think we find it really hard to believe. But Jesus is saying that, I think there, that there's more to life than being in control. And Paul got into this a little bit too. In many of Paul's writings, we hear about him talking about his sufferings, his difficulties, his challenges. And, you know, in some of them he's talking about, you know, I need to overcome these challenges. But he talks a lot about growth and power coming through weakness. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he talks about some of the issues in his life, or some of the experiences in his life where he wasn't in control. Let's read from verse 8. It says, "We are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed to our, in our body. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may also be revealed in our mortal body. So then, death is at work in us, but life is at work in you." He then goes on later in verse 16 to say, "Therefore we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." And I think, you know, Paul's using some sort of, you know, mystical language there, some almost paradoxical language. But I think what he's saying is that even though it may appear that we're failing, even though trials and suffering and circumstances beyond our own control may in one sense cause us death, you know, they're like death to us. And I think we could feel like that in the pandemic. I mean, obviously it is literally causing death for many people. It's tragic. At the same time, we're all experiencing a kind of death, right? Where it's, life is not the same. So outwardly it's like death, but there's this opportunity for it inwardly to work something good in us. He's talking about as like the resurrected life of Jesus. And this is obviously very similar to the life that Jesus talked about. You know, if you cling to your life, you'll lose it. But if you give it up, you'll gain eternal life, life eternal, this beautiful life. And I think what Paul is talking here is like for us to really live, to be our true selves, to be healed and made whole and become the people that we can be. It's very often trials and difficulties and circumstances beyond our control that give us an opportunity to see ourselves clearly and where we need to change and what's really going on. And that's a really good thing. It means A, that we can grow. It also means B, that it's not our fault, that it doesn't, being out of control or not having full control does not make us a loser. It's blessed are the poor in spirit, as Jesus would say. And I hope that's encouraging, not in the sense of saying, isn't it great that we're struggling? It's a terrible struggle. And I am really looking forward to the day when this pandemic has passed and we're able to experience life in a more full, beautiful way. But I am also conscious of this struggle working at me internally, and I think we're all feeling that. And rather than resist it, let's surrender to that process rather than fight it and try to either just sort of wish that it would go away and be paralyzed, or even just you know, beating ourselves up or obsessing about it. Maybe we can surrender to the work of God, the work of the Spirit in our own lives that's transforming us and resurrecting something eternal in us, something that's unseen to many people, but that is of incredible value. I love the Anne Lamott quote. She's a wonderful author. Here's something she said. "Your problem is how you are going to spend this one and precious life you have been issued. Whether you're going to spend it trying to look good and creating the illusion that you have power over circumstances, or whether you are going to taste it, enjoy it, and find out the truth about who you really are." And you know, maybe it's a stretch in times like this to say enjoy it, but perhaps we could see this as our lives as an adventure. And we go through dark times, we go through bright times. We might be in a dark time at that moment, but sort of relish the adventure and how it can cause us to change. Just finally on this point, I don't know whether this helps at all. I know this helps me a little bit, but I like to think of things in a sort of big scale or cosmic scale, if you like. Of, okay, so why is it that we've experienced life through death? Why is it that we experience growth through hardship? You know, is that the way of the world? Is that the way of the universe? I mean, is that what life's about? And I think of it, if you think about it from a scientific point of view, if you just think of evolution as an example, the evolution of life, I think there's a couple of ways of looking at that. One is, it's all about the survival of the fittest. So in other words, you know, to be successful, to really master life, if you like, you have to have domination over your circumstances, domination over your environment. But another way of looking at this is to think of it like, actually, evolution is all about adaptation. It's all about being able to evolve and adapt despite our circumstances. And actually, difficult circumstances create all kinds of creative opportunities for growth. And you know, when we look back at the sort of historical science of evolution, we see that happening. So it's not about domination, but it's about adaptability. That's a much more, I think, humble, loving approach to the way of life, the science of life, if you like, than one that's based on domination. And then if you think about this, again, another sort of cosmic way of looking at life is thinking about it spiritually. If we think about God, we might want, and perhaps I think we very often do, we sort of ascribe to God this CEO of the universe role, of a role of control, that God is in control in ways that we think about human control. But maybe that's not a quality of God, that God's not in control in that sense. God doesn't need to be in control in that sense. It's not part of being God, if you like. And why do I say, you know, what's the evidence for that? Well, I think some of the evidence is things that we wrestle with, which is like natural disasters and situations that happen where, you know, if God is in control, it really brings into question whether God is love, whether God is good. And I know we can sort of argue that point away by just saying, well, you know, we don't understand and God's God and, you know, is a higher intelligence than us. But I seriously wonder whether God is in control in the way that we think of human control. I also think we should question the issue of divine control. Because when we look at Jesus, and as followers of Jesus, we would say, if you want to look at God, if you want to see God, look at Jesus. There is somebody who's constantly giving up control, who's not dominating their environment, who exposes themselves to many circumstances that are out of their control, even to the point of death. I mean, that's the ultimate ultimate control that Jesus gave up. And in that losing control manifests the most powerful love possible. So if love is the most beautiful, powerful sort of agent in the universe, if you like, then it's manifest in a context of giving up control rather than power and domination. And when we look at Jesus, that's what we see. So when we look at Jesus, we see God. So it's like God is, perhaps God's control is not on God's agenda in quite the way that we probably, as our religions have evolved, have thought. I just leave that with you as a way of saying, you know, here we are. We're in a position of not being in control, and perhaps that can help us make some sense of our reality. Certainly doesn't make all the problems go away. Doesn't make it necessarily any easier. But I hope we can hold on to this potential for change in these circumstances, of eternal change. And secondly, it's not our fault, and it's okay when we are in circumstances, when we're not in control. Some of those we need to change, but you know, we work towards empowerment. But even that very often is out of our control. Couple of other things I wanted to mention as we look back, which kind of are related to this. I've mentioned them already. The first one is the reality of injustice. And I think what's happened through this pandemic, and I think control is a major factor here as well, but what's happened through this pandemic is that we've got a heightened sense of awareness about injustice in our culture. And, you know, I think that's happened in multiple ways, but like, you know, a couple of them would be the pandemic itself has been unjust or unjust, or at least it's exposed injustice. So, you know, we know that even though the virus can infect anybody, you know, it's indiscriminate in that sense, but the pandemic is very discriminating, based on economics, based on race, and you know, it's we've seen that played out. We've seen that on our news feeds. We see the data. It's played out. We've also seen. I don't know whether I'd say it's an unprecedented level of police brutality, but you know, the killings that have happened during this window of the pandemic have seemed to have shocked and rocked our culture more than ever before. And it's as though this veneer on systemic racial injustice has been peeled back, and we're seeing it for what it is. It's not new. I mean, health inequalities are not new. They, you know, it's been going on forever, but we've seen it more graphically in the context of this pandemic. And I wonder, and the same with other forms of systemic racism, but I wonder if actually the pandemic has in some way, and the loss of control that we've experienced personally, through the pandemic, perhaps it has in some way sensitized us more to the reality of injustice. It's not like injustice is new. We're just perhaps more tuned into it. And again, I just say a big perhaps here. And I'm not trying to paint this sort of rosy picture. Or isn't it wonderful that we've got this pandemic to bring us to our senses? But it strikes me that I think, for instance, with the shock and sort of the sense of appall we have at the death of George Floyd, where he was just so brutally murdered, that we couldn't just move on from that because of the pandemic. We're in this sort of standstill situation, which meant we had to watch. Even if we didn't literally watch the video, we're watching it all happen in front of us. And because our lives have slowed down, we couldn't just move on to the next thing like so often has happened in the past, where there's maybe it's the next news item or it's the next big thing in our own lives or whatever it is. So that has, I think, had something to do with it. The fact that we haven't had control over normal life and we've kind of been stuck in this time warp in some respects. We've had to look at some things that perhaps we would have moved on from quicker. I think also we all feel more vulnerable. Any one of us could get ill, could get sick with a disease that you know, has sort of mysterious consequences. You know, it doesn't affect some people so badly, but affects others really badly. But we're all vulnerable. We're all exposed. Our loved ones are exposed. We're exposed not just medically, but financially. You know, we can lose our jobs, and some of us have, and life can change quickly. So we're in, a heightened sense of vulnerability. And as part of that, I think we feel this sense of oppression. Like it's like the pandemic is a system that oppresses us. It's kind of all around us. It affects every part of our lives. It affects our families. It affects what we do. It affects our relationships. It affects our work. It affects church. It's kind of like it's everywhere, all the time. And there's no escape. It feels oppressive. It's exhausting and draining. And I think of, it reminds me of, my wife and I and our two older children, when they were very young, we lived for an extended period of time in Central America, mainly in Nicaragua and El Salvador, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And my wife's a midwife, I was working as a physician back then. And we, for a period of time, we lived in a very poor area in Nicaragua, on the Atlantic coast of Nicaragua. It was very hot, swampy, very remote, no running water, no electricity, very poor. And it would get kind of oppressive at times. We were way better off than everybody around us. But life was kind of hard. Just life was a chore. Doing anything was like a chore. And it was, you know, it was hard to get clean. It was hard to... get clean water, it's hard to get food, and it was just really difficult. But we always knew that we could go home or just leave, even just go to the capital, to Managua, for a period of time, or go down to Costa Rica. And even though we didn't always do that, there was usually a date on the calendar that we'd look ahead to that was, oh, you know, in like 6 months we'll be going there, or And we knew that at any one time, if we chose to, we could leave. Whereas everybody else around us, that wasn't even on the radar. And I think the pandemic is like, you can't get away from it. You can't just go down to Florida, or you can't go back to England, or you can't. It's like it's everywhere, and it has this oppressive sense to it, and an inescapable sense to it. And I think that's giving us a little taste of what racial injustice is like, what systemic racial injustice is like. It's like you can't escape it. You can't avoid it. Like people of color have been living in a system that is like that. And perhaps people, white people like me, are just beginning to understand what it's like. I mean, not in the same way, because the pandemic is not the same as racial injustice. But we get that sense of oppression that perhaps in some almost subconscious way has tuned us in a little more to oppression in other forms, namely racial injustice and other forms of social injustice. Again, I'm using perhaps a lot here, but I just wonder if this lack of control in our lives has opened our eyes to other people who do not have control over their own destiny through no fault of their own, because of circumstances to which we all, perhaps inadvertently, but nevertheless genuinely contribute by our silence, by our complicity. And this has given us an opportunity to open our eyes a little more. Again, I'm not trying to paint a rosy picture. It's tragic. It's awful. But then control, I think, also factors in, even in how we respond, or control issues factor in to how we respond to it. I think, for instance, I know, as a church community, and as particularly something we've been focusing on as we've gone through these Zoom meetings with the racial justice team, something we've been looking at is the whole concept of racial injustice. The system of racial injustice in our culture is white supremacy. Calling it for what it is. We're not white supremacists in the sense of marching with torches and some of the sort of the extreme forms we see of that in individuals, but collectively it's white supremacism that has created this system, or that is this system, that creates a system of advantage and disadvantage based on race. And I think we want to control that. Like, as I know, as a white person, I don't want to be complicit. I don't want to be blamed for that. I don't want to feel that I'm responsible. And I want to control the narrative, which would say there's other reasons. We call it something else. There's other factors involved here. And obviously it's a complex issue, but I think we're having to give up some control of the narrative, and give up some control even of how we go about listening, how we go about understanding, how we go about resolving. I think also a control issue kicks in because I think especially when we feel responsible for something, we want to fix it, right? Especially if we feel guilty. And so I think we just want to change it. We just want to make it all okay. And it's big and complex and difficult, and it can't just be changed overnight. And there are no quick fixes. And we have to be committed for the long term, not just take quick actions that might just be superficial and not actually that productive. I mean, there's things we can do now, obviously, and we should act. But real change is going to take time. And I think that can be frustrating. We can easily give up because, again, we want control. And if the things aren't changing the way we want, then we despair. And then, so another factor here, I think, is, I feel very sensitive about this one, is that I think one area we might be feeling a loss of control might be for some people in our community feeling that we've become very political, and not just political, but we've got this left wing political agenda, and that feels very uncomfortable, and feels like you might feel you have no control over that. And I just wanted to speak to that for a moment, because I realize that's difficult. I hope I can genuinely say I empathize. I know it's not easy if you're feeling it like that at the moment. But let me say that as a church community, and I say this as the lead pastor, I say this on behalf of our leadership as a whole, we're a team leadership here. We're not trying to be political. We're not a Democrat church. We're not a Republican church. We're a church that's following Jesus. that's what defines us. But we believe Jesus is all about justice, and all about social justice, not just sort of individual fairness, but fairness for society, fairness within society. And so as we pursue that, and in all its different forms, economic, racial, gender, sexuality, as we pursue what we believe Jesus really cares about, it's inevitably going to look at times political, even though we're not trying to be political. And that's for two reasons, because we'll start talking about issues that are normally reserved for political discussion. We'll talk about, you know, issues of race, issues of economics. But then also because to actually affect change, to bring about change in our culture, it means influencing decision makers, policy makers, leaders who are inevitably involved in political decision making. And so, you know, we kind of enter into an arena that clearly looks political. But we're not trying to take a side with a particular party or a particular political agenda. We're just wanting to stand for justice for the poor, for people who are discriminated against based on race, for people who are oppressed in whatever form, because we believe Jesus would do that and wants us to do that. And so we will support people who make decisions for the poor, for the disenfranchised, for the oppressed. And we will oppose people who make decisions against them. We'll, in that sense, we're like the prophets in the Hebrew scriptures, you know, who spoke out against certain political leaders. Back in that day, they were generally kings. But for other leaders that were making good decisions for the poor. We'll support people and policies that are just and for the poor, whether they're Republican or Democrat. I think it's important we clarify that's what we're doing. Now, I'm not in any way saying that it's not complex and it's not difficult. But we put a Black Lives Matter sign up outside our church a few months ago, just after the our vigil for George Floyd. And I know that was uncomfortable to some people, but that's an example there where we're not trying to align ourselves with a political organization or political party. And, you know, Black Lives Matter has it's a slogan, if you like. It's a statement. It's a movement. And that movement is organized in some respects. We're not necessarily aligning ourselves with any political aspect of that, other than we're trying to communicate to people that Black Lives Matter. Now, we know all lives matter. Of course they do. Of course all lives matter. But we're trying to empathize and communicate with a proportion of our society who feel that their lives do not matter. And we're wanting to call that out and say, you do matter. And you've said, does anybody think Black Lives Matter? And we're saying, yes, we think Black Lives Matter. And we're for you. We're for you. We're not just going to say, you know, we're using that specific language because we know that resonates with people, that that's an act of solidarity with people who are feeling like they don't matter. Once you get into the politics of all this, it becomes a mixture, right? It becomes there's people doing things in any given movement for good and for bad, people making mistakes, people doing great things. That's always the case. It's messy. But the reason we're putting that sign up is to say you do matter, and because you matter to Jesus. And we recognize that in this culture, you have not mattered, and that's wrong. And right now, there's still all kinds of inequity, and we hear that, and we're with you. So we're trying to be like Jesus in our flawed, messy way. That's where it's coming from. It's not coming from alignment with any particular political party. I say that because I just want to encourage you. If you're feeling uncomfortable about that, you may not trust me when I say we haven't got a political agenda in that sense. But I do encourage you to engage with the conversation, engage with the dialogue. Like we have a process going on in our church around racial justice. Racial justice, I think, whatever political persuasion you are, that's something that we can all get behind. It's a positive thing. It's a good thing. It's a Jesus thing. And that's why we're pursuing it. And so I just encourage you to don't stand off, but engage. And if that means having uncomfortable conversations and uncomfortable dialogue, please have them. And I mean that in all sincerity. And you may feel you want to have a conversation with me about some of the things that I've said today. please do. Everybody belongs here, and it's really important that we move forward together. But I think that represents another area of messiness, and another area, in some respects, of loss of control for all of us. You know, it's a messy situation. When we move into sometimes, you know, messy, ill-defined circumstances, which I think is always part of following Jesus, to be honest. The final thing I just wanted to reference here, and we'll just wrap up, is the issue of the power of relationships. And I think, again, there's a control issue here, but we've lost a certain amount of control of our relationships through our separation, you know, with physical distancing, quarantining, just the fact that we can't gather. I mean, you know, individually for a while that was the case, and even when we are together individually, you know, in smaller numbers, you know, there's masks and distance and no touching and all that kind of stuff involved. But even just for us as a community, sort of not being together in this kind of way. And I think what it's done is shown us how dependent we are on one another. And this is, again, another issue of control, that we tend to think of ourselves as islands. You know, we tend to think of ourselves as self-sufficient, or should I say, we want to be. We feel successful people are self-sufficient. They can stand on their own two feet, and they have some, they're responsible for themselves, and they can. That's good. But the reality is, no matter how successful we think we are, no matter how strong we think we are so dependent on one another, and we're realizing that, because it's like you don't know what you've lost until you've lost it, or you don't know what you had until you've lost it. You know, we're realizing, I think, how unfulfilled our lives are without each other, or how awkward we feel, or what degree of loss and grief there is that we're carrying around with us, because we can't be with people in the same kind of way. And, you know, we can Zoom and we can do things and watch a video like this, but it's just not the same. And so we're aware, I think, that we all belong to one another, that, you know, Jesus talked so much about we're all one, and I think we're, you know, that can be a theory or a sort of can be somewhat abstract until we feel on our own, and then we realize that, oh, what defines me is way more than me, way more than just this self. It's my neighbor, it's my family, my friends, the people that kind of make me who I am. Would be more than just our own individual self. And I think we're all experiencing that as we, you know, we need each other, and we're not in control, and we have to lean on one another and depend on one another, and that's a good and healthy thing. You know, Jesus didn't just teach it; he lived it. Jesus sort of showed this incredible vulnerability to the people around him, and he called them friends, and there were times in his life when he just needed to be with them. We're going to celebrate one of those moments in a second. But, you know, this sense of being one, again, I think it comes back to why justice is so important for us. It's like, if one of us suffers, we all suffer. If anybody feels they don't matter, then that matters to all of us that they feel like that. Because we're all dependent on one another. We're all connected. We really are all one. And Jesus kind of demonstrated that for us through his loving sacrifice. And we're going to sort of wrap up here. We're going to take communion together. And communion is this celebration of all sorts of things. And we'll just have a little ceremony around communion, which will explain some of that. But something that, you know, I've been reflecting on a lot recently is just, and have done in the past, is just how Jesus was, at the moment he knew he was losing full control, where he was going to be arrested, he's going to be tried, and he knows he's not going to get a fair trial. He knows this is probably the end. At that moment, he just wanted to be with his friends. And he said to them, you know, I've earnestly desired to eat this meal with you. He just wanted to spend his last night with his friends. And you get the sense of Jesus' vulnerability. And again, if we look at God, we look at Jesus. And here is this vulnerable God who's saying, I need you. It's like God saying, I'm not independent of you. It's like God saying, we're all in this mess together. And you know, which has kind of become a sort of saying in the pandemic, hasn't it? We're all in this together. But it's kind of like God saying to us, I'm in this with you. Not actually just, I'm in it totally in control. Don't worry about anything. I've got it sorted. I've got it covered. But actually, I'm in this messy, uncontrolled circumstance with you as well, because that's what Jesus was doing. So really, when we remember that, when we celebrate communion, we're remembering something incredibly profound. We're celebrating something incredibly profound. And I just want to leave you with one last scripture before we go to communion. And that's Jesus. It's a scripture we read a lot here, actually. It's Jesus talking to people who are feeling beat up, forlorn, oppressed, kind of tired, and perhaps despairing. And Jesus doesn't say, hey, listen, I've got everything sorted out. I've got my three-step plan. You know, I've got my book for you to, you know, just digest this and you'll have a successful life. He just simply says this, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So Jesus there is saying, come to me. God is saying, come to me. If you're feeling weary, if you're feeling like you're not in control, like things are not going the way you need them to be, not the way you want them to be, it's okay. Come to me. It's just a beautiful invitation. And let's bear that in mind. Let's internalize that now as we take communion together. Thanks so much for listening to me. I hope this was helpful in some way. Just some reflections that you don't have to agree with, but just some of my reflections looking back over the last 6 months. And again, thank you so much for your faithfulness and commitment and love for this community. Thank you.